This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava, and here's a test. Close your eyes and conjure a picture of a public figure, say George Bush or John Kerry or Governor Mike Easley. Now, is it the photos you've seen on TV that come to mind, or the caricatures from political cartoons, say the oversized ears of George Bush or the horse-length face of John Kerry? We've often counted on political cartoonists of any political leaning to cut to the chase of the stories, to let the hot air out of the balloons of many public figures. But it seems that fewer newspapers are hiring political cartoonists, while others are opting for softer political cartoons, so much so that one critic says political cartoons are ceasing to be political and may just be cartoons. 250 years after the first political cartoon appeared in an American newspaper, we're taking a look today at the state of the political cartoon with three editorial cartoonists in North Carolina. With us in the studio today are Dwayne Powell, who is the cartoonist for the political cartoonist for the Raleigh News and Observer. Welcome, Dwayne.
Good to be here, Melinda.
John Cole draws cartoons for the Durham Herald Sun. Welcome, John.
Howdy.
And V.C. Rogers draws for the Triangle's Independent Weekly. Welcome, V.C. Rogers.
Hello, Melinda.
And speaking of phones, you can give us a call this hour. Our number's 1-877-962-9862. If you have a question about political cartoons, well, this is the time to ask it. Well, you seem the people to ask. What makes a good political cartoon? I'm going to start out over here on my left. V.C. Rogers.
Well, I once said that the goal of a political cartoon, the ideal political cartoon, would be a blank piece of paper that made someone mad, because a good political cartoon makes a statement. Ideally, it summarizes a political position. It does it with wit and humor. Wit, I think, is the more important of the two, and it makes a memorable impression, and if you agree with it, you feel like you are on the side of the angels, and if you disagree with it, you feel like you're the scum of the earth. That's what it should do.
Dwayne Powell.
Well, I'll continue his line of thought here. I think the most important thing, really, a cartoon must do is not just illustrate, you know, something that's bad. You know, this policy that's going through the legislature is, hey, it's a bad bill or whatever. I think what we as cartoonists need to do is focus on, okay, why is it bad? You know, who's the guy over there? Who is the person, the live body who's behind that particular policy? And then that's where you can, I think, be more effective if you can actually point to where the policy is generated.
Mm-hmm. John Cole?
I really don't have much to add to what Colum said. I think he pretty much hit the nail on the head. Wit and humor and essentially it will distill something I've thought about before is that a lot of the times the political cartoons, at least in an immediate sense, can vilify a particular person or hold another official up. But a lot of times they really capture the political spirit of the times. And maybe getting ahead of ourselves, but I think it's really instructive the number of histories that you'll read of American history, where a lot of when you talk about political history, how much of that relies on the image of political cartoons through time? You know,
is that because there's so much of American history happened before photographs were around?
Or? Well, it could be, mm-hmm. But I think that in some ways it's almost sort of a working illustration. I mean, I think they're actually almost sort of working illustrations of the political what the zeitgeist was at the time, what the conventional wisdom was.
They take one of the things that political cartoons can do well, or that political cartoonists can do when they're on top of things, is take a fairly abstract issue and turn it into concrete terms. If you're looking at your late 19th century history books, you will see cartoons about the free coinage of silver in relation to gold and, you know, the Bryan McKinley race and things like that in 1896. The free coinage of silver is not, when you think of it, an issue that has a huge visual resonance, and the cartoonists sit there and sweat blood over the drawing board coming up with ways to express it and to express an opinion about it.
Yes, mm-hmm. And there's quite a lot of use of political cartoons, even the current political cartoons today, in social studies classes and history classes in school.
That must make you all happy, then.
Oh, yeah.
There's some,
well, I hope so.
Posterity?
We need to do something to get kids reading the newspaper.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Now, what was the heyday of political cartooning? Is that now? We talked about Ben Franklin starting this out 250 years ago
I would have to say that probably the heyday of it, at least when political cartoons would sway national elections and would do things political cartoons you want them to do when you're fantasizing at your drawing board, was probably the late 19th century, the period from really the rise of Thomas Nast in the 1870s through the end of the 19th century. That was when you had illustrated magazines like Puck and Judge and The Old Life, which was started out as a humor magazine, and they would run gigantic cartoons. I have one on my wall at home that's a two-page Thomas Nast double spread from the center of Harper's Weekly, and it's something like 19 inches wide by 12 inches tall. Wow. People do not get that size anymore, and they would have that in every week, and that would be the only visuals in the publication. When political cartoons had no competition, for basically, if you wanted to know what, say, the President of the United States looked like, you had the official portrait that would hang in the post office, and you had the political cartoons, and that was pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Just if I could interject here, it should be known that, just to let your listeners know, that Colm Rogers is the unofficial professor of political cartooning history in our humble group, the Association of American Editorial Cartoonists. There will be a test. After this broadcast.
I hear you have quite a collection.
Of cartoon books. I've got something like 2,500 books of political cartoons, which is something like more than 50% of all of them that have ever been published in this country. Yeah. Political cartoon books are fairly new. They didn't come along until the late 19th century. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've piled them up, and they're gathering dust on my shelves.
Those, but the cartoons that Cullen was talking about are beautiful. And there is one, I don't know, I haven't been down there in a while, but there was a store that an antique store here in Durham, or over in Durham, we're in Chapel Hill right now, that sold those center spreads. And I've got a couple of those at home, too, in addition to some Keplers. And they're just absolutely beautiful pieces of art. Beyond the fact that they made a political statement at the time, they are just, you know, beautiful to look at.
Well, I think, I'm sorry.
Dwayne Powell.
I think there was another great era in cartooning. I think cartooning kind of was on the, editorial cartooning was on the skids for a while. Everyone was drawing these old Mr. Worlds. And I remember as a kid growing up looking at newspapers, I wasn't particularly excited looking at these things, except for Herblock. He was the only one that seemed to have anything to say. But around just about the time Watergate hit, there was a cartoonist that came to America from Australia named Pat Oliphant.
He came over in 1964.
Yes. And he came over with a totally different style. I mean, most of us cut our teeth reading Mad Magazine and things like this, so we were more, I think, more interested in the humorous aspects of the drawing. And we weren't seeing this in political cartoons. But when we started seeing Oliphant's cartoons in the newspapers, there's a horizontal format as opposed to the vertical format, and this was really exciting. And for those of us who were used, you know, felt like we had something to say, it was nice to be able to expand into a more humorous approach.
Now, when you speak about the horizontal versus the vertical, are you talking there about the panel strips?
The basic shape of the shape of the cartoon.
The basic editorial cartoon shape was always just the classic editorial cartoon shape was a vertical format on the editorial page.
In daily newspapers, it was that format, partly because a lot of cartooning was sort of drawing someone standing there, and someone standing there is a vertical format, and when you get into this cinematic kind of display, the wide panorama with 100 horsemen coming over the hill, you tend to want to do it horizontal.
Right, right.
And Oliphant brought in that element of just light English humor to it. He was very influenced by the Punch cartoonist like Ronald Searle, who is still alive and kicking, but was doing editorial cartoons in the 50s in England, and a man named Carl Giles, who was a very funny English cartoonist. And Oliphant, who came from Australia, brought some of that with him. Mm-hmm. And when that combined with the Mad Magazine influence, this whole baby boom generation growing up, cutting their sense of humor on Harvey Kurtzman's magazine, and then suddenly politics has Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon, and the editorial pages are opening up. It was kind of a perfect storm of
really
opportunity
was.
For cartoons.
Then you have great talent like Jeff McNally.
Jeff McNally, who came
Tony
out of
Ott,
UNC.
Sure. Like this, yeah.
And so let's talk about how y'all got started here in this. Colm Rogers, how did you get started being a cartoonist?
Well, the standard answer to that question is, when did you quit being a cartoonist? Because just about every child in the world starts out drawing pictures, and some of us keep doing it. I started basically drawing the teacher in math class in dull algebra classes.
Was this a caricature?
This was a caricature. Okay. I started out on people's faces, and it's still my favorite thing. I think everyone has something that's their favorite thing to draw, and mine is the human face. And did it for my college paper when I was at Davidson back in the 60s and 70s. And then 10 years later, being an unemployed ex-Chapel Hill graduate student, wondered what I could do for a living, and decided the only two things I wanted to do were act and draw pictures. And if I became an actor, I'd have to leave town, but you can draw pictures anywhere. So I went to the newspaper and showed some things. And the editor of the Durham Herald looked at my work, which was no good at all, and said, Mr. Rogers, do you do anything besides caricatures? And I said, well, I do cartoons. And so I started freelancing for them. Mm-hmm. And it turned into a job that eventually ended, and now I'm at The Independent freelancing cartoons for them.
Right. And Dwayne Powell?
My story is very similar to his. I feel like I was passing my cartoons around the class in high school, things I did about the teacher, and now I'm doing it through the News and Observer's editorial page. After when I was in college, I had 2 more years of college. I was majoring in agribusiness back in a small college in South Arkansas. And the only cartoons I saw were what I saw in the Arkansas Gazette and the Arkansas Democrat. But I never even considered it for a career. I figured I'd go back and farm with my father. And I was in the office of the local newspaper it was one of those little small papers and had a stationery store in front. And I was buying some paper for an English theme I was working on. And the editor of the paper recognized me. I guess my cartoons, they were posted all over campus on the bulletin boards, but I'd never had anything actually in print.
Did I understand that you used to do these on napkins and just leave them around
campus? Yeah, okay. They were just everywhere, And he stopped, and as I was on my way out, he came and grabbed me by the arm and said, hey, I wonder if you'd be interested in doing a political cartoon for my newspaper. And I said, well, I wouldn't even know how to start. He said, well, I'll pay you $5 a week. And I said, that'll buy a six-pack. Yeah, okay.
And so the start of what is now a long career, several decades long, in political cartooning. We'll get back to Dwayne Powell and Colm Rogers and hear John Cole's start in the cartooning business when we return. And we're taking your calls here. Our number's 1-877-962-9862. Support for The State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners who support WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava, and we're talking today about political cartooning, that regular feature on the editorial page. But the number of cartoonists who still draw cartoons for daily newspapers is heading downward. And this is the 250th anniversary of what is considered to be the first political cartoon to appear in an American newspaper. That would be Ben Franklin back in Philadelphia in 1754. There's a new book out about this called Attack of the Political Cartoonists. It's a collection of works by a number of political cartoonists across the country. And here in our studio, we have three of them from North Carolina: Dwayne Powell, a daily cartoonist for the Raleigh News and Observer; Colm Rogers, who draws for the Independent Weekly; and John Cole, who draws cartoons for the Durham Herald Sun. We welcome your calls this hour. If you're a fan of political cartoons or have a question about them, our number is 1-877-962-9862. Before the break, we were talking about how y'all got into doing this. And Dwayne Powell, you were saying it was just walking in by happenstance into a newspaper office in Arkansas, and somebody had seen your drawings that were on napkins around campus at school and decided to hire you.
Right. Well, not hire. I mean, it was just I was still in school, but I was drawing one cartoon a week for this little weekly newspaper. But I was very lucky. I guess it's as far as having a catalyst that got me started in wanting to be a cartoonist. The very first cartoon that I drew that this little newspaper ran was picked up on the op-ed page of the Arkansas Gazette. And I remember I went home that weekend, and my father picked up the paper and said, Dwayne, isn't this your cartoon in the Gazette? And so really for the next 2 years, I had a cartoon in the Arkansas Gazette. So by the time I graduated from college, I had a fairly good portfolio of work. Mm-hmm. And I had by then decided I wanted to maybe pursue that, but there was nowhere to go in Arkansas because both major newspapers had cartoonists. But I did apply for a job as a reporter at a smaller newspaper at the Hot Springs Sentinel Record, Hot Springs, Arkansas. And so they hired me as a reporter / cartoonist / flunky. I mean, I did everything almost.
How did you like reporting? How does that compare to cartooning?
I liked it. I mean, it gave me a chance to learn to write, which I think applied eventually to being a cartoonist. And I also worked in the art department. I did paste up and, working with the old Amberlith and everything. But I didn't get along too well with the publisher there. My cartoons were more liberal. And that was just when Watergate was starting and everything. And I had actually had a couple of cartoons picked up that had run in Time and Newsweek from this place. But not a one of them ran in that newspaper because they wouldn't run my cartoons. What I would do, I would draw a cartoon after they turned it down, then I would mail it to other newspapers, and the Arkansas Democrat and Gazette would run them. Usually the same cartoon would be in the Democrat on a Saturday and the Gazette on a Sunday, And then it might, two or three that year were picked up and ran in Time and Newsweek. But that didn't matter to them at all. They kept turning them down.
Well, John Cole, what was your breakthrough? How'd you get started?
I sort of like Colm, I drew cartoons all through grade school. I drew them for my junior high newspaper and then my high school newspaper. As a matter of fact, I probably have the distinction at Tate's Creek High School in Lexington, Kentucky, of being the single cartoonist to in back-to-back issues of the masthead, the student newspaper, to receive a letter demanding my removal signed by, I think it was 150 students. I won't go into what the cartoon was about. It was high school humor at its best.
Well, we have to ask. What was it about?
It was about acne.
Oh, that's exciting.
So I'm a cartoonist, so let your imaginations run wild.
Were you for it or against it?
I was just having fun with it. So anyway, the next issue, we had a letter signed by 120 students or something like that, and the student body president saying that these people need to get a life, and they thought it was really funny. So, but anyway, I eventually went off to
The reactions broke down along facial lines.
That's right. But anyway, after that, I'd always known that I wanted to go into newspapering. I never really seriously considered drawing political cartoons for a living. Like my father, when I decided to finally do that, my father sort of like looked at me, and I think you told me one time you had a story, a similar encounter with your father, Duane, that he looked at me and it was sort of like this, it just never, he'd always read political cartoons in the paper. He didn't think that anybody actually got paid to do them. And, of course, my father was a physician. And,
I don't know about you, son, but I worked for a living.
That was something along those lines. But anyway, I graduated. I went off to Washington and Lee University. I majored in journalism with an emphasis on reporting. And I remember going on my exit interview with the head professor at the journalism department there, who advised me that nobody's going to pay me, real American money to draw funny pictures. Taking his advice, I went off and worked for a couple of small newspapers in Kentucky, which is where I grew up. While I was working at a small daily newspaper there, I started really, that's when it was probably about 1981 or 82, well into to Reagan's first term, that I really started looking at political cartoons and said, I think I could probably do something like this. And that's when I think it was in 1984, I managed to wangle my way into some tickets to go to the presidential debate. It was between Mondale and Reagan at the Kentucky Center for the Arts in Louisville. And I came back to the paper where I was working in Danville, Kentucky, and drew a page worth of political cartoons about what I'd seen that day. And the reaction was fairly positive. And I put together a portfolio. I kept drawing about one cartoon a week in addition to my job as photographer and a reporter, and I was a feature editor. It was sort of like, I think I've done just about everything in newspapers except actually sell advertising and run the press. And eventually put together a portfolio and wound up down here in Durham. I started at when I arrived in Durham at the old Durham Morning Herald and the old Durham Sun, they've since been merged into the Herald Sun. My main job was being a general news artist, then I was a graphics editor, then I was an art director, and it's been only in the last 8 years or so that I'm the full-time political cartoonist. So mm-hmm. I don't know if there's ever a breakthrough. It's been a long process, though.
A lot of political cartooning jobs tend to come about, especially these days, and by talking yourself onto the staff of a newspaper in any capacity, and once you're inside the building, drawing cartoons and pestering with them until they print them.
That's right. And then eventually getting, and eventually they, hopefully you have editors and publishers who see the desirability of having your voice in the paper.
Do they have to agree with your voice?
Usually.
Or do you have to agree with their voice to have a long and happy tenure?
Definitely to have a long and happy tenure, you have to be in general agreement. That's probably true with any job under any circumstances, is that you can't constantly be having fights with the boss and expect to have a long career. One of the reasons I think that political cartoon jobs are sometimes hard to come by is that there's a very delicate dance of feeling each other out. Is this newspaper the kind of place I want to work? Is this person the kind of person I want to hire as a newspaper? Do you wear well? Political cartooning is a conspicuous position. Editorial writers tend to be are anonymous by nature, and you can, if you have a stable of six or seven of them, you can replace one, and nobody will notice. But if you have a cartoonist, the cartoonist is just there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can speak to that with some experience. After I left Arkansas, I went to the San Antonio Light for a couple of years, and I went to the Cincinnati Inquirer. It was my first full-time editorial cartoon position. I replaced longtime editorial cartoonist L.D. Warren, who was an institution there. And I knew they were fairly conservative, but the portfolio of cartoons that I sent them was essentially a portfolio of Nixon-bashing cartoons. And they offered me the job based on this portfolio, so I went up there. And about 7 months later, after they had approved every cartoon that I showed them, the editor comes in my office, and he's looking at my cartoons up on the wall, and he says, "Dwayne, do you ever read our editorials?" And they, essentially, we were... that started, that's when they started meddling more and more and trying to change me into their way of thinking. And it was starting to be rather uncomfortable, actually. Yeah, because I finally realized, we both realized that we were in this situation where they were really, they were writing editorials that were supporting Nixon right to the bitter end. Mm-hmm. And here I was bashing him in my cartoons.
Right. Let's go to George in Raleigh now. Hi, George.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, how are you?
Good to hear from you.
Hi, George.
Hey, good to hear from you too, Dwayne. I'm calling to ask a question of you three guys. I'm familiar with two of you, but not the three of you. In doing editorial cartoons, you talk about wit and humor. Recently, the L.A. Times cartoonist got in trouble over something I think that was called vicious. Now, how do you guys draw the line between wit and humor and viciousness?
Well,
Colin Rogers?
That is, to a certain extent, in the eye of the beholder, since frequently a cartoon that you think is a very humorous commentary on somebody you dislike would be a vicious attack if it was drawn about somebody you did like. Mm. It is one of those things. Everybody has their own taste. I consider myself to be a fairly mild-mannered person as a cartoonist. I'm less mild-mannered in real life than I am on the page, which
now,
is the opposite of the way.
Why is that?
Part of it is, I think, in the history of cartooning and in the present of cartooning, there are sort of two poles that pull at each other. There is the vicious attack school of cartooning, and there is the humorous commentary school of cartooning. They both have their place. But throughout history, it seems like the two major cartoonists at any given time, going back to the days of Thomas Nast, who was a hugely partisan cartoonist, and his chief rival during the late 19th century was Joseph Kepler, who tended to see politics and public life as a kind of circus. And the question is, do you see it as a morality play where you have saints and knaves, or do you see it as a carnival in which you basically have various species of fool?
Mm. So, which do you see, knaves or species of fool? Dwayne Powell or John Cole? And then John Cole?
Well, I think it depends. I think Cole makes a really good point, and I think it's really – I try – as a political cartoonist, I try to mix them up. You know, there are times that when I'll read something in the paper or some politician will do something that just makes me so angry that – sorry, viciousness is the name of the game that particular day.
Like who?
Well, I mean, it's like, well, I'm trying to think. Well, I mean, the obvious one would be like Osama bin Laden. But, I mean, there are times where that George Bush, I mean, it's like, you know, George Bush lied. But he didn't lie about Iraq, I don't think. He lied about Medicare, about how much it was going to cost. And there are those days where I really want to just, you know, open up on them. And then there are other days where you want to use a scalpel instead of a broadsword. And I think that kind of thing, I think that's sort of like varying your strokes and having a number of different chops. And I can't say that I do it particularly well, but I think readers like it. I mean, I think readers would get tired if every day they're going to open the paper and there's just this, you know, this broadside, or it's just this sort of, or there's sort of like an inconsequential little gag about it.
When you have the same opinion about, or the same degree of intensity about every subject, whether it's shark attacks in the media or wars in Iraq, you lose your edge, or you don't have a touch. You have to. It's really an ongoing conversation with your readers is what you have on the page. It's the metaphor I use for it is like writing a postcard every day. You only have this much space that you've got to fill up. You're filling it with a cartoon. You can't write an essay. So basically all you can say is as much as you could put on the back of a postcard. But if you're sending somebody a postcard every day over a period of years, they can get a pretty good idea of the situation and your view of the world.
Mm-hmm. Dwayne Powell?
Well, I think you need to have humor. You know, to bring the reader into the cartoon. You want them to want to look at the cartoon. And hopefully, you know, there's a broader message underneath the humor. But, you know, there is a degree here of how vicious you want to get and how people interpret it. I did a cartoon during the Reagan's funeral. I had gotten kind of tired of all the revisionist history that had been going on all week, and I finally couldn't help myself any longer. I did a cartoon that took the Bush administration to task for, well, essentially I drew them hooked on, their campaign wagon was hooked on to Reagan's caisson. So this, I mean, we got about 300 letters and emails and all the same. I mean, it was really the first day the phone didn't stop ringing, and the weekend papers were just full of letters, almost everyone castigating me.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do when that happens?
Well, I didn't say anything in the cartoon that Ronald Reagan's son didn't say that same night, I mean, that afternoon in the eulogy. But what happens, well, I take the calls, I talk to them. And
all 300 of them.
Not all 300, okay. But the ones I called, the ones that called me, I talked to all of them, and I called some back that the editor forwarded to me, mm-hmm. and I answered emails, giving, you know, just explaining the cartoon, my feelings on it, and then the good thing about this kind of debate, I know it must scare publishers half to death, but what happens is people start writing in with the other side.
The people who disagreed with the letter writers, mm-hmm.
yeah. you know, and it, so it starts. So it starts. It stirs some debate here.
Okay, so. Let's go to Ted in Durham. Hi, Ted. Hi, Ted.
Hello.
Greetings.
I have a question about truth in political cartoons, and I'd like to use an example and ask John Cole to respond. The example is about a week ago where his comic is showing John Kerry and his referring to his response to or his presentation to Congress some many years ago, and the comic or the presentation there of John Cole seemed to state that John Kerry claimed that he had committed atrocities when at that time it was clearly known by all the editors and everybody that was not true and that he was referring to reports that had priorly been presented to Congress.
John?
I don't believe did I draw that cartoon? I'm not trying to be disingenuous, but did I draw that cartoon?
For sure, yes, I remember it very clearly.
I don't remember ever drawing a cartoon about John Kerry saying that he had committed atrocities, and I don't believe that I drew that.
About a week ago or so, do you remember that one?
No.
Well, what about the central question there about the truth and political cartoons?
Well, yeah, I believe that the cartoon should be true to the facts. Of course, during the time like this, I mean, it's like in any campaign, it's like, you know, it's like war. The first casualty of war and the first casualty of politics is the truth. But I believe that certainly that when somebody calls me, and it's like when Dwayne gets calls about his cartoon about Ron Reagan Jr. or about George Bush and Ronald Reagan's funeral, that he has the element of truth on his part to make the argument. I mean, everybody's going to make an interpretation. I mean, there's a matter where your political cartoon involves interpretation based on facts. It's an opinion. So,
there's another thing here that factors in. I feel like it's getting more and more important in our business, is what we read. Trying to, you know, a cartoon can't say on the other hand, or it's, you know, it's what you read and you see something that happens and you react to it as a cartoonist. Well, if we react to a news story that's wrong, and, you know, that's really not good.
Mm-hmm. And if you have faulty information to start with.
Yeah, well, faulty or biased information. Mm-hmm. So, and on my own part, I've become much more cautious in reading and determining what I think about particular issues until I've really looked at a lot of sources.
Have mm-hmm. you gotten burned that way?
Not recently, because I've, over the years, I've learned to try to be careful like that. I mean, some would say, well, you're just reading their own biased sources. Well, no, I'm not. I watch Fox News. I try to watch, you know, read both sides of the issue.
Fox News being views divergent from your own,
Well, not, well, I'll watch other sources where, you know, how other media outlets are playing particular issues. before I'll determine really what I think about it.
Cullum
One
Rogers?
Of the fairness aspect of it is fairness in cartooning is an unusual thing to have to figure out, since you're starting with caricatures, you're starting with giving people larger noses and funnier looks than they have in the mirror.
And ridicule.
Ridicule. But the basic fairness is you don't make up your facts.
No.
I mean, you do not make up your facts. And the second degree of fairness, which is a little bit harder to stick to, that I think we'd all agree that you should, is that you don't go around getting hugely morally indignant over things that are committed by one political persuasion if you don't also get hugely morally indignant when the other guys do the same thing.
Double-entry
bookkeeping.
You get into a situation, I mean, I to get back to what Ted was calling, I did do a cartoon a while back about John Kerry, and it had to do with, I was playing off the idea, you know, of just the foul-mouthed nature of this campaign. You have, you know, I want to do this cartoon showing John Kerry, showing, you know, they had Dick Cheney who used the F word directly to Pat Leahy while on the Senate floor, and then you had Hollywood stars like Whoopi Goldberg engaging.
That was a great cartoon. I saw.
Yeah, and yeah. Engaging in scatology or using vulgar terms referred to the President of the United States, and I also drew John Kerry using the F word to refer to an interview he gave in Rolling Stone magazine back in 2003 to refer to Bush's Iraq policy, and I had a call from somebody who said John Kerry never used that. John, and that's what I had to actually go in, and he emailed me, and I actually had to go in and search the archives for that story because it was never really reported. So I mean, like a lot of that times, you know, it's you're counting on your readers to be up to speed with what you're reading too. So anyway,
and we'll get up to speed some more with John Cole, V.C. Rogers, and Dwayne Powell talking about political cartooning just ahead. More of your calls 1-877-962-9862 on the state of things. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkava. We're talking this hour about that staple of the editorial page, the political cartoon. With us are Dwayne Powell from the Raleigh News and Observer, John Cole, who draws cartoons for the Durham Herald Sun, and V.C. Rogers, Cullum Rogers, who draws for the Independent Weekly. We're taking your calls to the numbers 1-877-962-9862. And with us on the line right now from Kinston is political cartoonist Donna Hardy. She got her start in journalism at the Kinston Free Press, and she's had cartoons in Carolina Journal, Carolina Country Magazine, among others. She signs her cartoons by the name Donna Reed, and she's with us now on the phone. Thanks for being with us, Donna Hardy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, you know, most political cartoonists are male and white. I'm looking around the room here. But I'm wondering why there aren't more women in political cartooning.
Well, that's a very popular question, and it always eventually gets asked. If not to start with, it always comes up, and it's something that I'm sure that other women cartoonists themselves have asked. There are others, believe it or not, and it's a very complicated question, actually, and has many different aspects to it, I think. But I don't know. I can only speak for myself, you know, and when answering it. I'm sure there are others or other female cartoonists have, you know, their ideas as well. But I can say for myself that I didn't have many female role models in that regard. You know, I have just, you know, really admired editorial cartooning, but I never, ever even questioned the fact that I didn't see any women cartoons.
Did it ever make you question whether you could do it or not, though?
No. Okay. I questioned myself as far as, you know, my literal artistic ability to draw, because it has really come a long ways through the years that I've been doing it. But I guess I'm the oldest of four girls, and so my dad, you know, and mom, they all tried to encourage us to be independent. And so I never ever questioned the fact that being a woman would hurt my chances of being successful.
Well, so Don Hardy, what are the main issues you draw cartoons about?
Well, my favorite things to draw about are local issues here in Eastern North Carolina, in particular Lenoir County, and state-level issues. But the niche that, you know, that I work in is in the local cartoon arena, because, you know, these guys, there's so many people out there that the syndicates just flood the newspapers with very economical, ways to produce cartoons on their editorial page. But the local issues is a wonderful niche to for others to.
And what are the local issues that you're writing about?
My favorite things are education, within the county level, city politics, mostly in children, social issues. Those things really appeal to me, especially education, public schools being my very, very favorite thing to draw about, because I have three kids in public schools, and I'm faced with those things all the time. And you know, as a cartoonist, ideas pop in your mind as you struggle through the different things, and you know, with kids.
Well, Donna Hardy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Donna Hardy is a freelance cartoonist in Kinston. She signs her cartoons by the name Donna Ree. We continue our conversation with Dwayne Powell, V.C. Rogers, and John Cole. We're talking about political cartooning here in North Carolina. And let's go to John, who's in Concord. Hi there, John.
Oh, good morning, folks, or afternoon.
Afternoon to you.
Yes. Just a quick question for the entire panel to start them discussing. Is there any one cartoon that they've done that they're either very proud of or that they feel has been extremely influential in local or state or national politics?
I'm going to start
I'll just listen to the conversation off the air.
Okay, I'm going to start with Dwayne Powell this time.
Well, I spent about 20 years trying to get rid of Jesse Helms, but...
Do you miss Jesse Helms being in public office?
Yes and no. I think Helms, the last few years we wound up sort of adversarial. We had this... I would do a cartoon about him, and he would call me up on the phone and want the original, you know. But
not so much in the early days.
Yes.
It was much more adversarial.
Yeah, I was a little... angrier and more, as going back to the vicious cartoon we were talking about earlier, I think I was pretty vicious and, towards him earlier on.
Yeah.
But as far as, you know, influencing things, I don't know. I can't think of any one particular cartoon that took anything over the top. I think we're just another voice, you know, out there trying.
Because
you know,
in the case of Jesse Helms, he kept winning re-election despite
he kept
your
winning,
best efforts.
Yeah, my best efforts. He retired, you know, with his boot.
V.C. Rogers?
Well, actually, the cartoon of mine that got the most reaction was probably the most local cartoon I ever did. It was in The Independent maybe 4 or 5 years ago, and it concerned putting a fence up around a parking lot at Brightleaf Square in downtown Durham. And unless you're parking in this three-block area of downtown Durham, the cartoon would mean nothing to you. But a week or so after it appeared, I was going through the Brightleaf Square area, and every single office, every single display counter, somebody had taken that cartoon and put it up, and it was basically just making fun of the people who ran a parking lot and were going to start charging people instead of letting them park free. And it's the classic example of how you can have the most impact with the most local cartoon. It's like the pinprick. It hurts a lot because it doesn't cover much area.
Yeah.
John Cole?
I think probably local cartoon. I can't really think of one cartoon that I've drawn that would, like, you know, change the face of, you know, even I can't even change the face of life in my own house. So, you know, it's like I wouldn't even want to, you know, think beyond that. But I have done cartoons that I was particularly proud of and I got a lot of reaction to. And they usually are local cartoons because Durham politics provides an endless source of material. I have some of the best comedy writers in the business doing my job for me sometimes there. And I did one cartoon particularly back, I think it was back when this whole, there was a story involving a woman who had managed to work her way into some low interest loans and government grants to buy a house in northeast central Durham about 8 years ago and then proceeded to never pay any of it back. And they found out that, you know, we found that the newspaper found out about this when they were doing a story about the sorry state of Durham's loans, and they found out about this when the city was getting ready to go in and not only not collect on the loan, but rescheduled and then renovate the woman's home for her. And of course, there were a lot of taxpayers in Durham going like, what's up with that? And so I did a cartoon. It involved three of the council members and the mayor of Durham, and I did a take on them as Durham's new own home redecorating team, and it's in Durham's own home redecoration show, While You Were Out of It. And just because they all claim they had no idea who this woman was and how this had ever happened. So,
Are you constantly thinking of, I wonder when you're just going through everyday life, are you constantly thinking of these odd scenarios and ways you could just take the reality you see there and just, you have so much control when you draw it because you create your own reality.
Yeah,
do you sit at parties sometimes and just think of people being in different
situations? As long as I can remember, if I'm sitting with three or four people or in a group or whatever and there's been a discussion going on and I'll chime in and say something, what are you, idiot? We've been talking about that for 15 minutes. And actually, with me, I'm usually thinking about a cartoon idea or something like that. Or
you're kind of
zoned out.
Somebody will say something. I'll be listening to somebody, and then they'll say something that suddenly makes me think of something, and all of a sudden I'm off like floating down some tributary. And a lot of it gets to the point also is that once you do it, it's like Cullen was saying, having a conversation with your readers every day, 5 days a week. If you do that 5 days a week, people ask where the ideas come from. So I don't know, but what happens is you just develop a way of thinking about the news. You think visually, you think in terms of allegory and analogy, and it really is sort of sometimes it's extremely difficult. You know, a lot of times it's 4:30 in the afternoon, you're banging your head against the wall trying to think of an idea.
And so when you're banging your head against the wall, is there a certain cache you can go to of ideas of, this will always work in a pinch?
The doodling, random doodling, as somebody once described it, is taking a line for a walk. And you just try to you go through your bag of tricks. You say, can I make a pun on this person's name? Mm-hmm. You know, is there something about housing authorities, say, housing this old house? Mm-hmm. Think of everything you can think of that has the word house in it. It's a kind of free association word game that you have to then discipline to your politics and the beliefs and what you can get in that little square rectangle.
For example,
Dwayne Powell?
Well, it's always so easy to get ideas when you're sitting around having a beer and drawing on napkins. And I think, why doesn't this happen when I'm
sitting in an office?
This is at 9 o'clock in the morning in his office.
And I'm one of those.
Need to restructure your work day.
I have this long-suffering editor, Steve Ford, anyway. Who puts up with me? I read a lot during the day, and finally, I finally settle on a topic and all, about mid afternoon, but for some reason the idea just never seems to come until like 4:30 in the afternoon.
Nothing like a deadline.
Well, it's like someone just comes in and hands the darn thing to me. Sometimes it's like it seems so obvious that I couldn't force it.
There's no greater inspiration than a deadline.
You have to go through the process. It's like,
And how much time do you have to write that in? I mean, how much time do you have to draw your cartoon? What's your deadline before it has to go to the editorial page?
They try to shut the page down around 6:30 or 7. I'm usually the last one finishing up. The deadline, I think, is late as 9:30 or whatever like that. But it takes about 2 hours to draw the cartoon from once the rough sketch is approved.
Speaking of approval, does the editor ever have a say to you and say, you got to tone this down a little bit, or you're off base here, or you have to pump it up some?
The worst reaction is, I don't get it, because you really can't argue against that. You can't say, yes, you do.
That's absolutely right. I mean, and most of the time, at least in speaking for myself, I'm if they don't want to run it, then I won't draw it, but they can't tell me what to draw. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's their paper, and it's their completely right to determine what they want to run on their editorial page.
One of the arguments going on, or the editor-cartoonist argument that has been going on for years is the cartoonist essentially a columnist who is paid to have his or her own opinion and express it in the paper, or are you an editorial page writer with pictures whose job is to express the consensus opinion
sometimes
of the newspaper?
Sometimes you can look at your editor as maybe someone who saves you from yourself. Steve Ford and I have this running joke about, I call him the hyphen police because, he's always catching little things like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. Let's go now to Kit in Pittsburgh. Hi there, Kit.
Hey, how are y'all today?
Fine. Did you have a quick question for our guests?
I wanted to tell Mr. Powell that he may think that his cartoons have an impact mostly across the state of North Carolina, but he did a cartoon that was spectacular about the laws that North Carolina had regarding domestic violence issues. I don't know if he remembers it, but it was such a great cartoon, and it showed this woman sort of laid out in her front yard, and she'd just gotten punched by her husband, and the deputy was there sort of apologizing to the man for disturbing him, and this is your wife, so it's okay to punch her. That cartoon is now used in PowerPoints, you know, in lots and lots and lots of other states. So I wanted him to know that that cartoon has, in fact, really touched people across the country.
Well, thank you very much. That's another interesting aspect of cartooning, I think. I'm always amazed at when people bring up cartoons that I drew 20 years ago or something. And, you know, and I'm sure this happens to
Something way back.
You know, it's something you have to stop and think, okay, you know, I try to remember what it was. Mm-hmm. But they remember specific cartoons and can actually just go into great detail about what was in the cartoon.
There's this new book out called Attack of the Political Cartoonists, which it's a compendium of cartoonists across the country. And there's a short history in there. And there's an aspect of this history that I wasn't aware of, and that was that early 1900s, there were not one but two efforts in two states to ban political cartooning.
Yes. I mean, this was back during the early days of cartoons in newspapers. They were no longer in relatively expensive magazines. They were in the cheap daily newspapers you could pick up. But the governor of Pennsylvania, Samuel Pennypacker, someone had drawn him as a parrot in a cartoon. And so he had a bill introduced in the legislature, which was passed, that said you could not draw human beings as animals. And it was not specifically to ban cartoons. It was just basically the don't draw the governor as a parrot bill. And someone counteracted that. I believe it was Homer Davenport or one of the great cartoonists of the day, by drawing all of the Pennsylvania politicians as things like trees and eggs and rocks.
He found the loophole.
You know? Yeah. You can't draw them as animals, and nobody said you couldn't draw them as fish. You know?
Well, it seems like in this day, I would hope that there would not be an effort to restrict political cartooning, but there have been reports that there is some self-censoring going on, that some newspapers are just not wanting their political cartoonists to be as hard-hitting as they might have at one point. And I'm wondering what you think of that. Dwayne Powell?
I don't know. That's not really a problem that I have, but there it does seem to be that tendency out there. I mean, I have a pretty good idea of what cartoons are being drawn out there and by who and who's doing good work. And just in my own opinion, most of these cartoons aren't making it to the major news publications like Newsweek and places where people can really see them. I don't know if it's the corporate mentality out there.
The harder-hitting ones are not making it.
Usually you'll see in Time or Newsweek, it'll be a funny cartoon, but, they don't really say a whole lot. They're kind of gag cartoons. And the other thing, and I still don't understand this, and that's they used to run quite a few various cartoonists from around the country, but now they just pretty much run the same two or three cartoonists. Mm.
John Cole?
I think that may be the case. I think it's interesting. I'm never sure. Somebody was at one of the callers was asking earlier to draw the line between wit and humor and viciousness, and I'm trying to mount myself. It's funny you try to draw that line between where does a gag start and serious commentary stop. And I really don't know where that line is because one of the best cartoons that I think was drawn by Mike Peters back during Three Mile Island story, and he had just a picture of a woman, two women sitting there with shopping bags, and their little kid is being tagged along behind them, and they're out in front of Three Mile Island, and the kid has a foot growing out of his head, and the woman's looking at her friend and saying, "Well, he's grown a foot since I saw him last."
That makes a really good point.
That's a gag. That is a great piece of comedy writing that makes a point. So I'm really not too sure where one stops and the other begins.
Well, I hope you all keep up that blurring that line for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure talking to y'all. John Cole is cartoonist for the Durham Herald Sun. Dwayne Powell is the daily cartoonist for the Raleigh News and Observer. And V.C. Rogers, Cullum Rogers, draws cartoons for the Triangle's Independent Weekly. The three will appear in a new book called Attack of the Political Cartoonists, and all will appear to talk about the book tonight at 7 at Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh. That's the state of things for today. Support for the state of things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Melinda Pencava. Thanks for listening.